How to live in a world that's short and filled with so much beauty, but also so much that's tragic and out of control, is actually what the book of Ecclesiastes is all about. So far, the teacher examined life to try to find meaning. He has looked at all the ways that we try to find meaning and fulfillment in life, pleasure, work, riches, and even social justice. And he's found that none of them provide the meaning we're looking for. He's called it all vanity. If, according to the writer, we can't find meaning in pleasure, work, or riches, then how then should we live? Our Calvinist friends will sometimes use Ecclesiastes 6, 10 through 12, along with other passages to support the position of election and predestination. But Solomon is simply addressing the question, how do we live when we're not in control and when we don't have what's good for us? He's urging us to submit to God's sovereignty in our life. We could spend an entire class on election, predestination, and the balance between the sovereignty of God and man's free will. The teacher is reminding us of something that we too often forget. God knows all things from beginning to end. Here it is, David. Hold on to this. He is not confined in the perimeters of time as mankind is. What God has put into motion, mankind cannot change. This does not mean that we are exempt from the consequences of our choices. It simply means that God already knows that what our choices will be. There are no surprises for God. In verses 10 through 12 of chapter 6, we learn it's foolish for man to argue with God about what he has foreordained in verse 10. Arguing with God with lots of words does not profit anyone in verse 11, because God knows what is best for man and what his future holds. The teacher is saying God is the powerful creator and is control. We don't know what's coming. We don't even know what's good for us. The things that we think are good for us are often bad, and the things we think are bad often end up being good. So any questions or comments?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
That paragraph where it says it's foolish for a man to argue with God about what he has foreordained, argue with God with a lot of words does not profit anyone. And we kind of gloss over that occasionally. But how many times has a three-year-old just tried to argue with us about something that we know as an adult is ludicrous?
Yeah.
But the three-year-old is convinced about something that is just from their bent. And you know, compared to God, we're that three-year-old.
Yeah.
And God, he looks at us, you know, he just got a snicker sometimes. Okay, whatever you say, kiddo.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's a very significant point right there.
Very good. Thank you. Anybody else? Okay, since we have plenty of time, let's read our text this morning. Who would like to read verses 10 through 12, chapter 6?
I will.
Okay, David.
Whatever exists has already been named, and what humanity is has been known. No one can contend with someone who is stronger. The more the words, the less the meaning. How does that profit anyone? For who knows what is good for a person in life during the few and meaningless days they pass through like a shadow? Who can tell them what will happen under the sun after they are gone?
Okay, and now who'd like to read verses 1 through 13 of verse 7, chapter 7? Okay, Marie?
1 through 13?
Yes, ma'am.
Like the crackling of thorns under the pot, so is the laughter of fools. This too is meaningless. Extortion turns a wise person into a fool, and a bribe corrupts the heart. The end of a matter is better than its beginning, and patience is better than pride. Do not be quickly provoked in your spirit, for anger resides in the lap of fools. Do not say, "Why were the old days better than these?" For it is not wise to ask such questions. Wisdom, like an inheritance, is a good thing and benefits those who see the sun. Wisdom is a shelter as money is a shelter. But the advantage of knowledge is this: wisdom preserves those who have it. Consider what God has done. Who can straighten what he has made crooked?
Okay, thank you. I've already given you kind of a synopsis of 10 through 12. Any questions or comments about 10 through 12?
Yeah, sorry.
Yes.
I actually did my homework this week because I did it like last Sunday.
Oh, okay.
But I did have a thought on this.
Okay.
The verse 10 of chapter 7, why were the old days better than these?
You're right.
I heard a podcast a few months ago, and the guy is brilliant that does this little podcast. And he's done like, I don't know, 7 episodes in the past 10 years, so it's not a regular thing. But his question was, when were the good old days?
Yeah.
And it was really interesting because, oh, the good old days, back when, you know, we were young and the world was right. And, well, let's see, Cuba had missiles pointed at us, and Russia was just threatening world war, and okay, so that wasn't the good days. And so he says, okay, well, let's go back a little further. The good old days, the 1800s, late 1800s, were just the heyday, back when tuberculosis was killing 50 million people, and Spanish flu was about to do the same, and massive deaths because of pandemics. Says, okay, well, let's go. And he did this all the way back to times B.C.
Yeah, yeah.
And pretty much came to the conclusion, there's no such thing as the good old days. There's always something, you know? And you know, we look at today, and I've said this before in this class, I think, that, you know, all the stuff that we're looking at today is like, oh, the world is burdened on us and everything else. Well, there's always a world burdened on us. Mm-hmm. There's always something. The devil is working in our lives every single day of every single life of the 100 billion people that have lived throughout time. And this is just, that verse is like, oh man, yeah. I thought of that episode. Like, oh, he did it so well.
I've even made the statement before that at some point we're going to look back, or some people will look back to today and say, this is the good, those were the good old days.
Yeah,
so.
Absolutely. Give it 10 years.
So I guess we should be calling it the bad old days.
No, just the old days.
It's all relative. Sometimes it's been, you know, is good old days. So Shane, do you have your hand up?
Well, I was just going to say, I think the key to the whole concept of the good old days is we were younger then.
Yeah.
So anytime I can think of myself being younger, that's a good old day.
I forgot the second part of this point. The other part is, it's also from another podcast. I listen to a lot of podcasts when I drive to Arkansas and back. But the other part was it was a podcast about how the human brain works. And the human brain has a tendency to filter out bad stuff.
Yeah.
And we all know this. The kid that grows up in a bad situation, but in fact, they gave a really good illustration. I can't remember who it was, but they were talking about how this kid was abused, was neglected, and everything else. But all that kid remembers is her mother being the loving person that she was.
Yeah.
And she had no memory of all things.
Yeah.
And so our brain has a tendency to filter out things.
Yeah, we were.
And so we remember the good, no matter what the bad is.
We try to remember the good.
Yeah.
To counteract that bad.
And the perfect example of that, we talk about the craftsmen of the old days.
Yeah.
Well, there were really bad craftsmen in the old days as well. Their work was forgotten because it was so terrible the people whose work lived for centuries are remembered because they were so great.
We
so
still
that,
have,
that was,
yeah.
That's that verse. For me.
Yeah, okay.
That was your 13 minutes.
Yep.
Oh, well.
There you go. Glad I could help.
Anybody else have any quick comments about 10 through 12? Okay. The teacher gives us three examples of things that could come our way that might be bad, but then argues that they're actually good. The main point he's making in this passage is that God is in control, so look for what's best, even in what looks bad. Nobody would choose to experience these three things, but the teacher says that they are actually better than if we avoid them. First thing that we'd rather avoid, but what we can can be very good for us is death. Mentions this in verses 1 through 4. So the first question is, if you could choose between a good name or a good reputation or riches, which would you choose and why? Who would like to get us started this morning? If you had a choice between good name or riches, what would you choose? I've heard a good name. Anybody else want to go with a good name? Several heads are shaking. Anybody like to go with riches?
Can we have both?
Can you have both? Well, you could. If you use the riches correctly, yeah, you could.
Solomon had both.
Huh?
Solomon had both.
He did. Jim?
A lot of people who own today that are wealthy and have good health.
Yeah, I'm saying you could have both if you use the riches properly. Yeah.
But if you don't have a good name, the riches don't matter.
Well, it doesn't matter. If you only had one or the other, yeah. I think we'd want the good name.
I wouldn't know.
You can't buy a good name or a good reputation. And Thomas Paine puts it this way, reputation is what men and women think of us. Character is what God and angels know of us. So, where's the heart of the wise versus the heart of the fools in verse 4? Where's the heart of the wise? Let's start with them first. House of mourning. So where are the fools? The heart of the fools. In the house of pleasure or feasting, depends on the translation. You may have feasting instead of pleasure. So question number 3 goes with this. Why is it better to go to a house of mourning than to a house of feasting or pleasure? Why is it better to go to that house of mourning?
If we're just living a life as a thrill seeker, there's not a lot of value in that.
Okay.
I'm not saying we don't seek thrills, and that is bad, but you know, if you're just seeking thrills or great places or whatever, just living for yourself, that's problematic. It's not living for others.
Okay.
It's not living for God.
Very good.
We got to be careful how we seek for our...
How we seek it out. Marie?
I don't know if this is it, but I do know that it makes being around someone who's lost someone or just being aware of it or losing it does really make me know that, you know, life is short. And we had a very particular friend that most people here know, Brad Bynum.
Right.
And his sudden early death had a very big impact on me.
Yeah. Change your priorities, didn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Just think, let the little stuff go.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that is what Solomon was talking about.
Okay. No, that's good.
I think it's just something to think that someone who is, say, living their life to the fullest or going out on a limb and just being adventurous is living for themselves. That could be done intentionally for some others.
Okay. Anybody else?
Just the act of empathy is living for others.
Yeah.
A huge part of living for others, which, you know, Jesus said that's one of the two greatest commands.
Mm-hmm. This is what I had. Because mourning comes to all people at the end of life, and because we can't afford to live in denial of death. So like Marie says, we're all going to face death, just a matter of when. So which is better, thinking about our death or living in denial? Do what, Connie? You don't like either one? Kevin?
So what's wrong with a good party?
A good party? Nothing if it's clean, wholesome fun. Yeah. Anybody? Thinking about our death keeps us from living in denial about our own future death. The human side of us wants to believe that we'll never die, but we can't afford to live in denial about the fact that our life is short and that we will die. So it kind of opens our eyes to our future. Yes, ma'am.
If you think about your death and your plan for your death, it sure makes it easier on the family members.
Amen. 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 Sure does.
Because it's going to happen.
Yeah.
We had a friend pass away from my childhood, and she had planned everything. She had even picked out the songs,
yeah.
Who was going to speak.
Yeah.
Everything was paid for ahead of time, and when it hit the family and she passed away, two kids and the husband, it was really neat because
yeah.
The funeral home just showed up. They were there. They knocked on the door, and they took over.
Oh, really?
They were both like...
Yeah, yeah.
It was amazing.
So the second thing that we'd rather avoid, but that can be very good for us, is rebuke. Verses 5 and 6 continues the theme that sorrow is a better teacher for us than laughter. Why is it better to listen to the rebuke of a wise man than to listen to the song of fools? Verse 5.
The song of fools has no value at all.
Okay.
Living for oneself.
Okay.
Versus living for others. If a wise person is helping you, they are living for you, and it's good to listen to that.
Okay. Anybody else?
I mean, in general, if you want to better yourself and improve yourself, then you have to face the things that need to change in order to do that.
Yeah.
And the only way that happens is when we accept the rebuke of the wise.
Yeah. They just dig that hole deeper, don't they?
And, yeah. And it just becomes worse.
Yeah.
It's like the old, you know, it's like a leader who surrounds himself with yes men.
Yeah, exactly.
If everyone around you just tells you how great you are every day, then you'll never really get better and achieve. It's when you're willing to listen to the person who points out what you're doing wrong that you really can change.
Yeah. Okay, so in verse 6, to what is the laughter of fools like, Bob? It's nothing, is it? It says it's like the crackling of thorn bushes burning under a pot. So what happens when you burn thorns?
They turn to ash.
Before it gets to ash, David. Play along now. You got to play along. I'm sorry? It pops and cracks. Yeah, a lot of noise. And usually how long does that fire last? Not very long at all, does it? And how much heat does it put out? Not much. So a lot of noise, it doesn't last long, and you won't get much heat out of it. So that is what the laughter of fools is about. The rebuke of wise men, like has been said, nobody goes looking for a rebuke. But it's needed. It's better than the laughter of fools. So, any comments or questions?
Yeah,
The third and final thing that we'd rather avoid is patience. That's verses 7 through 10. What makes a wise man foolish? Verse 7.
Extortion.
Extortion, bribery, some translations say. If, this is number 8, if the end is better than beginning, verse 8, does the end justify the means?
No.
Why not?
Because what we think is the end is not generally.
Yeah, that's not what this verse is teaching.
No, that's not what it's talking about. Go ahead, Shane, explain it to us.
Well, it's not teaching us to get to the end any which way we can. It's basically teaching us that when we achieve the goal and we reach the end, there's a sweetness there that transcends what is at the beginning.
Yeah.
And so, to me, this verse is talking about a disciplined approach to achieving the goal, not the ends justify the means.
Yeah.
No matter how you have to get there.
Does everybody understand, or is everybody familiar with that phrase, the end justifies the means? Does anybody not? And don't be embarrassed.
I think your question on the paper here is answered by your thought for the day at the end of
service. Did I do that on purpose? No. It just happened.
It is.
Yeah.
It's right on. Sorry.
Yeah. Basically, the comment means doing something wrong to achieve a positive end and justifying the wrongdoing by pointing to a good outcome. Basically, Shane is saying, what Solomon is talking about here. He's basically saying when we get to the end, everything that we had to go through to get there is making the getting to the end a lot sweeter or better. So, does that make sense? Is that pretty well what you said? So,
also makes you stronger.
Usually does. You're right. Makes you stronger. Yeah.
Or kills you.
Or kills you. Or give you a pulled muscle that you've had for 4 weeks.
Amen.
Finally going to PT in the morning, but that's beside the point. So why should people not be quick to anger in their spirit? Verse 9. Why should we not be quick to anger? Or
You do foolish things.
Anger resides in the hearts of fools. The patient in spirit are better than the pride of spirit. Verse 9 says at the end, for anger resides in the bosom of fools. Comments? Yeah. Jim?
Anger drives us to do foolish things. I mean, a lot of times, some of the most foolish things I've ever done in my life, I did because I was angry.
Yeah. Jim? Yeah, we'll get there in a minute.
You mean like driving in destitute traffic?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Any other comments on verse 9? Jim is anxious to get to verse 10.
I would just say that it's anger is a simple based reactionary emotion, right?
It's normal, isn't it?
Yes, it's normal. I think part of what Solomon is getting at, wisdom surpasses that. Patience teaches us to get past that basic reactionary instinct. And it takes wisdom to have the patience to get past just being gut-wrenchingly angry and reacting in a time based on our emotions. And we have to work to achieve that patience to get through life, and that is a path to wisdom, to get away from that base instinct of anger.
Okay, Jared?
Yeah, well, elaborate further. Righteous anger is so moral to get away from that. You can be complacent with that, how it happens, that goes. If you're right, you need to present to wisdom.
How many practices the count to 10 before you react method when you're angry or
Okay.
Valeria, I'm assuming you do that every time. Is that...
How many like to practice that?
The question is, how many actually do? Because I need to learn from them. So, but we're all familiar with that statement, right? When you, before you react, count to 10. And what does counting to 10 do for you?
Gives you
time to think about it, to kind of work it out, whatever. So,
a medical person would tell you that it gives you a moment for those adrenaline that suddenly started flowing to start working through
kind of ease
it
down,
just takes seconds.
Yeah. So, and that's patience, isn't it?
Yeah.
Basically, what we're doing is having patience, not reacting before then.
It is hard to do.
You're right. I can get to about 3, but that's about it. So.
That's why you have to run.
That's how why you run to get it out.
It gives you patience.
So, question number 10. And David's already touched on it, but we can unpack it a little bit more. Our memories sometimes fool us into thinking that everything was better in the past or the good old days, but verse 10 says otherwise. What are your thoughts on this? Jim, we'll start with you.
I agree.
Okay, you agree?
I agree. Okay. All
right. Easy enough. Anybody want to... Go ahead.
I will expand on that.
Okay.
Back in the old days, I was taught that before you answer, count to 10.
Right.
But what I did was I used that 10 to load all my mental bullets.
Yeah. Roger's saying hindsight's 20/20. So.
Supposed to be.
Yeah, supposed to be. We should learn from all this, shouldn't we? Anybody else have a comment?
When I was a kid, my parents always referred to the good old days, and so I was looking forward to when I got older so there would be some.
I mean, both of my parents and probably a lot of y'all's, both were born during the Depression, which we consider not very good days, but that's when both of them were born. And so I think we're going to look back that's today at some point.
You appreciate more, I guess. And from when you live through hard times and you look back at it with appreciation for what you had and how you got it.
Right. And how God provided you through that, whatever the situation is. Yeah. Anybody else? Margaret?
You know, you didn't lock the front door. A lot of rock and roll that was really cool. It was good music. That's what we say the old days.
Yeah. Yeah.
That we thought were positive that we missed.
When we lived at home and mom and dad took care of us and we didn't have to worry about paying bills and...
Yeah, the good old days is what you perceive to be good.
Very good. There you go. That's a good point. Cindy?
But I also remember that our parents had the same outlook on life as we do today.
Mm-hmm.
How many of them approved of Elvis Presley?
Yeah, exactly.
That's what we grew up with.
Apparently Margaret's mom and dad did.
Yeah. So I think...
Yeah.
See how bad the world is.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
And they shake their heads about the youth of today.
Yes.
Exactly.
They did and we didn't.
Exactly.
My mom liked Elvis Presley because her parents didn't. She actually met him. Put her hand on his pink, first pink Cadillac.
We like the Beatles and our parents.
Yeah. Yeah. So the end of a thing is better than the beginning, even though it may be hard when you're in the middle of the muck. It's easy to long for the old days or to want to give up, but hang in there. The end is better than the beginning, but you'll never see it if you're not patient. That's not on your sheet. I'm sorry. That's just some thoughts I had. Any comments or questions about death, rebuke, or patience? So what's really needed, the teacher says, is wisdom. In verses 11 and 12, the teacher sings the praises of wisdom. If you have wisdom, you'll be able to see the good even in what's bad. What, along with wisdom, is good in verse 11? What does verse 11 say is good?
Inheritance.
Your inheritance. Is this a material, spiritual? What kind of inheritance is this?
Yes.
All of the above?
You know, physical inheritance is just a blessing.
Yeah.
Properly used, of course.
Right.
But, you know, I think it could go either way on that.
Inheritance of experience.
Experience. Our experience or someone else's experience?
Ours.
Mainly ours, but it doesn't hurt for someone else to tell us what they may have went through at some point.
That would be an inheritance.
That would be part of the inheritance, yeah.
Always say that, you know, the Old Testament, you know, you look at size of the Old Testament, look at the New Testament, it was written for us to adhere, to look at what happened so we don't have to go through those same mistakes. So it's both.
Yeah. And verse 12 says that both wisdom and money can be used as a defense, but that wisdom has an advantage. How is wisdom better than money? Verse 12.
If you have wisdom, you'll know what to do.
Exactly. And what to do if you don't have money, right?
Well, you don't really run out of wisdom. You can run out of money.
That's true. You run out of wisdom?
You run out of wisdom too, yeah.
Oh, okay.
When you get angry.
Wisdom gives life to whoever has it. When you're wise, you'll be able to see the good even in what's bad. So then we conclude with verse 13. What does it mean that God can make straight what he has made crooked? What does that mean? If God's made something crooked, how can he make it straight?
He can make good out of bad.
Okay. Anybody else have a thought?
Isn't that saying things that God has made a certain way crooked, that man, we can't straighten.
We can't straighten it.
We can't fix what we think God messed up, which he really didn't.
Right. God has made both the day of prosperity and the day of adversity. Any comments or questions about, please, ST6.
I think cutting off at 13 is kind of a disservice because 14 is the very next line.
It does.
When times are good, be happy. When times are bad, consider this. It's really, you know, whatever is there, he's saying, our response is our responsibility. Hey, that was cool.
You like that?
That was good.
It's really a tease to get you back here next week so we can go into 14.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
That's what it's all about. So. So in conclusions, I've given you a bullet point, the bullet points of what our text goes over. I'm not going to sit here and read it. You can read that. But always remember, God is in control of your life. You don't know what's coming your way, and even if you did, you wouldn't know what's good and what's bad. So enjoy the days of prosperity that God gives you, because he has a purpose that you may not know about. God is in control, so look at what's best, even in what looks bad. Final comments, questions. Don't go away, we're not through yet. Next week, we're going to look at Ecclesiastes 7, 14 through 29. Go ahead and read that ahead of time in case Gary decides to take his 13 minutes next week and we're running late. Probably, more than likely, we'll announce this, but because of the potluck lunch and the family meeting next week in here, we'll probably take the class into the auditorium. But we'll let you know about that ahead of time. I have a 3-minute video. I found this week. I thought it was pretty good. Everybody familiar with Paul Harvey? Okay. This is a speech he did on April the 3rd, 1965, titled, If I Were the Devil. The words will be on the screen if you want to watch them up there, but you also have them in your notes. So David, let's get that started and then